We'll move to questions without notice. I'll give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. The Albanese government failed to prepare for a High Court decision it knew was coming for almost 6 months, which resulted in the release of almost 150 hardcore criminals, including rapists, murderers and paedophiles, into the Australian community. At least four of these criminals are alleged to have already re-offended, including a sex offender committing another assault and a paedophile attempting to contact minors. Will the Prime Minister apologise to the Australian people?
Yeah. Call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. The High Court ruled that indefinite detention was unconstitutional, and that is now the law of the land. The government must act in accordance with the law. We argued against it, of course, but once the High Court ruled, we had no choice but to respond. Community safety is our priority, and I'm very pleased that the Parliament has passed stronger laws to keep people safe.
To keep people safe. Order. Members on my left. Order. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition will cease to check.
And I'm pleased that it received the support of both sides of the chamber. Our actions mean we have four layers of protection: preventative detention, community safety supervision orders, electronic monitoring devices and curfews, and stringent visa conditions. And certainly, I am sorry any time someone is a victim of a crime, wherever it's committed, at any time, against any victim.
Order. Order. The member for Hume will cease objecting when a question is about to be asked. The call to the member for Hunter.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. How will the passage today of the Albanese Labor Government's closing loopholes legislation deliver better pay and safety for Australian workers?
Yeah. Call to the Minister for Employment, Workplace Relations and Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Mr Speaker, and I thank the member for Hunter for the question and acknowledge that from the moment he arrived here, he's been arguing that we need to close the labour hire loophole. We're going to do that today. Today. Today is a great day for workers across Australia. Today's legislation will make workplaces across Australia safer. Today's legislation will also stop underpayments. Stop underpayments by closing the labour hire loophole, and stop underpayments by finally making wage theft a crime. I want to thank those members of the Senate crossbench who were part of this, the Australian Greens, Senator Lambie, Senator David Pocock and Senator Lydia Thorpe. I want to acknowledge, though, that those opposite did what they have always done. And once again, when given the chance, which way do you vote on wage theft being a crime?
Order. Order. The member for Deakin will cease objecting. The manager is on his feet on a point of order. And I'll hear the point of order.
Mr Speaker, on relevance, the question in fact was commendably tightly drafted, talking about Australian workers. No reference to the opposition. The Leader of the House has gone straight there. He's outside of the terms of the question and should be directed back to the question.
The question. Order. Order. Members on my right, the question was about how the passage of today's legislation. So, obviously, the minister in his answer is going to talk about what happened in the passage of the legislation. So, his answer is being directly relevant, and in continuation, he'll be heard in silence.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Some of those opposite, in particular, might not be aware of just how unfair the labour hire loophole is, and so I want to repeat an account given by the member for Hunter himself for when he worked in the coal industry, where there were five workers.
Order.
He was one of them.
The member for Gippsland.
I don't know how you got five people in the car when he was one of them, but the five of them would drive to work together. All five were doing the same job. All five were
Barker,
on the same roster.
Objecting.
Three of them were directly employed. The other two were labour hire. The difference in wages for those people with the same qualification on the same shift each year was a total of $30,000 different. simply because there was technically a different employer, miners were earning $30,000 a year less. Imagine if some of the companies that have been responsible for this behaviour had spent a little bit less on advertising and a little bit more on paying their workers. But when it was simply put to them, why are you using this way of underpaying staff? It was, well, it's legal. Well, it's not going to be legal anymore. It's not going to be legal anymore, and after question time today, the message will come back to this House and the final part of passage of this legislation will be before us. So far, this term alone, when it's come to the passage of legislation, those opposite have voted 34 times to keep wages low. 34 times. The final chance will come this afternoon as to whether or not they believe wage theft should be a crime, whether or not it's time to close the loopholes that see workers underpaid.
The member for Page is warned. Once the minister concludes his answer, and I'm about to call a member, is not the time to interject. He knows that, so he's now warned. Remember, that's no more interjecting from the member for Page. And I give the call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Prime Minister and concerns the Attorney-General's aggressive verbal attack on a young female journalist yesterday.
Order.
This occurred
members
in a media
right
conference regarding...
The Deputy Leader will begin. Order. There will be no interjections during questions being asked. So out of courtesy, the Deputy Leader will be invited to begin her question again.
My question is to the Prime Minister and concerns the Attorney-General's aggressive verbal attack on a young female journalist yesterday. This occurred in a media conference regarding the government's botched and mishandled actions in releasing almost 150 hardcore criminals into the community. A young female journalist asked if a woman who had been assaulted by one of those released deserved an apology. Not only did the Attorney General refuse to apologise, he aggressively shouted at the young female journalist. Has the Prime Minister forced the Attorney General to apologise?
The call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. The Attorney General has, my understanding is, has spoken to the journalist concerned, has apologised, has had a discussion with her, courteous discussion with her. When our standards aren't met in this place that we expect, that's the appropriate course of action to take.
Give a call to the member for. Member for Hume. Give a call to the Honourable Member for Lingiari.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. Treasurer, how is the Albanese Labor Government's responsible economic management strengthening our economy and cleaning up a mess of a wasted decade?
Give a call to the Treasurer.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the wonderful member for Lingiari for her question. Mr. Speaker, we are working for Australia to take the pressure off Australians, to strengthen Medicare and to build a future made in Australia in a world of churn and change.
Order.
And we know that people are still doing it very tough because of persistent inflation and higher interest rates and global uncertainty, and this is slowing our economy in expected ways, and we did see that in yesterday's national accounts. But Mr. Speaker, we aren't just acknowledging this, we are acting on it. With a combination of cost of living help and budget repair and investing in housing and energy and skills.
The member for
and
Hume
we are making welcome and important progress on inflation, on the budget and on the economy as a result of our efforts. Quarterly inflation is now around half what we inherited. Wages growth is stronger. Budget deficits are much smaller. The participation rate is higher. The unemployment rate is lower than when we came to office. And more jobs
Order.
Have been created on our watch than any other first-term government ever. We are restoring real wages growth. We've had two consecutive quarters of
Order.
Real wage growth compared to the negative 3.4% that we inherited at the election. And wages are now growing around twice as fast as they did under those opposite.
The member for Bowman is
We are repairing the budget, Mr. Speaker. We turned a $78 billion deficit into the first surplus in 15 years. That $100 billion turnaround is the biggest ever in this country. Because of our responsible economic management, gross debt will now peak lower, and that's saving Australians tens of billions of dollars in interest costs. This comes from a combination of spending restraint and savings and banking upward revision to revenue in our budget. And our progress and our strategy on budget repair has been welcomed by the IMF, Reserve Bank, Fitch Ratings, Deloitte Access Economics, the OECD and others, as making an important contribution to this fight against inflation. And it's made room for $23 billion in cost of living relief, which took half a percentage point off inflation in the most recent data. Remember, this is the help that those opposite voted against. Speaker, we finished the parliamentary year not just understanding the pressure that people are under and the reasons why our economy is slowing, but most importantly, providing the responsible economic management to steer our economy through. Responsible economic management has been the defining feature of this government this year. It will be the defining feature of the mid-year update I release with Minister Gallagher, and it will be the defining feature of the year ahead as well.
Before I call the member, just resume his seat for a moment, the member for Calais, I'm pleased to inform the House that present in the gallery today are delegates attending the Australian Olympic Changemaker National Summit in Canberra. And also we have a guest from the Victorian Parliament, the member for Croydon and the Shadow Minister for State and the Shadow Minister for Employment and Industrial Relations, the Honourable David Hodgett. Welcome to you all. I give the call to the Honourable Member for Calais.
To the Minister for Infrastructure. The axing of over $2 billion in federal funding for the Great Western Highway upgrade is outrageous and disgraceful. Traffic jams over the Great Dividing Range have become a way of life, and you yourself said it's a project that certainly is needed. Why have our communities been betrayed in this way? Will you reinstate this funding? And why haven't you or your office answered my written request for a meeting with you?
Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting before I call the minister. The member for Riverina is warned. Give the call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you again. Can I thank the member for Calais for the question? As the member knows, and most members here know, because we put it out on email, I hold a clinic on Wednesdays. Every member, every backbencher, every minister, every shadow minister is welcome to come to my office. I've got the department secretary there, I am there and my staff are there to talk to and answer questions about projects right the way across. We do it all the time. Many members come, you've come previously as well, and I'm always happy to talk to you about that. In relation to the decision taken to the Great Western Highway, and I know this is a project that the member of Calais has been talking about for some time, but let's look at the facts here. The project that was supported to connect, was supposed to connect the top of the Blue Mountains with the west of the Divide. It was meant to include an east and west realignment to the highway and a central tunnel to connect the two ends. You can't just do both ends, you've got to do the entire corridor. The tunnel. Let me just tell you a little bit about the genius of this, because this is important for those opposite to actually listen to.
Minister will pause. The Leader of the Nationals and the Member for Barker will cease interjecting during this answer, or they'll be warned. So that means no more interjections in this answer, and the rest of the chamber, the Minister deserves to be heard in silence, because the question was asked in silence. The Minister has the call.
Thank you. I note with some irony the previous question about shouting at women when you do that, but thank you very much for the protection.
Order.
I then just suggest...
Order. Members on my left. Order. The Minister shall return to the question.
Thank you. And as I said, however, the tunnel that was proposed by the previous New South Wales National Party would have been 11 kilometres long, the longest tunnel in the country. The Commonwealth and New South Wales government had agreed to jointly fund $2.5 billion for the east and west sections on the basis that the former New South Wales government would be responsible for the middle bit. However, not a single dollar of funding was ever committed to that project. Not a single dollar. And I well remember previous John Barilaro making some comments about how he felt that somehow the Commonwealth should stump up 80% of what would have possibly turned out to be an $11 billion, 11-kilometre tunnel. We suspect more. So, unfortunately, the delivery of this project has not been possible. We will continue to work with the New South Wales Government about what we can do along that corridor to ensure the safety of people who use that. But that, of course, means that we are investing significantly in the regions already, doubling Roads to Recovery, increasing funding to the Black Spots program and creating a new program for local councils to apply for to ensure that we've got safer roads.
Order. The Minister's time has concluded. I call to the honourable member for Higgins.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Yesterday, the Prime Minister brought First Ministers together for a National Cabinet meeting. What are the outcomes of this significant meeting and how will they strengthen Medicare and the NDIS for years to come?
Call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Higgins, my favourite ever member for Higgins, I must say, for her question. And indeed, yesterday the National Cabinet advanced reforms in health, but also following on the work that we'd done with the National Skills Agreement, we had the most significant National Cabinet meeting on domestic policy that we've seen for a very, very long time. Significant deal on health reform. Locking in health and hospital funding so the Commonwealth contribution rises to 45% by 2035. Locking in a 12-year agreement on health and hospitals is a significant achievement, whilst delivering also an immediate $1.2 billion injection in strengthening Medicare, more urgent care clinics, action to keep older people out of hospital and those who should be out of hospital earlier, providing them with a pathway in order to do so, making sure we deal with health workforce issues as well. Secondly, of course, we had the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Now, the NDIS has delivered life-changing support for Australians, and we want it to be strong and sustainable into the future. National Cabinet agreed to work together to progress the legislative changes and work together to improve the experience of participants and restore the original intent of the scheme. We'll jointly design and fund foundational supports to be delivered through existing service settings such as schools and childcare centres, and we'll work in a constructive way to make sure that people with disability get the care that they need. We also agreed to extend the GST No Worse Off guarantee in its current form for 3 years from 2027-28. What this combination does is to provide states and territories with the certainty to be able to provide the services that people rely upon, making sure that we're delivering in a way that's constructive, the Federation working as it should in a constructive, cooperative manner. And I do want to thank the Premiers and Chief Ministers for the work and agreement that they have done. This is an outstanding outcome from yesterday's meeting, and I look forward to seeing the results in issues like addressing elective surgery waiting lists, which will be an absolute priority from the health reforms that we dealt with.
Call to the honourable member for Wannon.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Courier-Mail has just reported that Queensland Police have arrested a fifth criminal released by the Minister into the Australian community. The individual has reportedly been arrested in connection with an outstanding return to prison warrant after being released by the Minister without any checks being carried out. Can the Minister confirm that this person should not have been released into the community?
Order. Members on my left, the member for Moreton will cease interjecting. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question.
Order.
As the opposition
and
indeed the Shadow Minister is well aware, I can't comment on individual cases. In fact, Speaker,
order.
As the opposition leader himself has said, and I quote the Leader of the Opposition, I am not going to comment on individual cases because I will have been a decision maker. If matters go to the court again, I don't want to intervene or taint that process. Now,
Member
I will also want to say this. On the 10th
Member
of November, on the 10th
ejecting.
Of November, we set up as a government Operation Aegis, a joint task force between the AFP and the ABF, working closely with state and territory police forces to share information and enforce visa conditions, steps which have been enhanced by the legislation which passed the parliament late last night. This work, of course, continues.
Give the call. Order. Give the call to the honourable member for Blair.
Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Health and Ageing. How is the Albanese Labor government working cooperatively with the states and territories to ensure that public hospitals are properly funded after a decade of cuts and neglect?
Call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Thank you, Speaker. I thank my friend, the member for Blair, for his question. Well, as the Prime Minister said, Mr. Speaker, what we saw yesterday was all of Australia's governments working together for the people of Australia. And you know, it hasn't always been the case. Australians for too long, too often, have watched governments stuck in trench warfare, playing the blame game, particularly in critical service areas like health and hospitals and disability supports. We saw a very different approach yesterday, and it was an approach that was a great credit to this Prime Minister and to all of the Premiers and Chief Ministers. It's an approach that will deliver Australians better health care, better hospitals and more sustainable and functional systems of disability support. In health, as the PM said, he announced more investment in strengthening Medicare, things like more urgent care clinics, as well as an historic funding deal around hospital funding, which will see the Commonwealth increase our supports for state efforts to do things like curb ramping and clear those elective surgery waiting lists that have built up over the course of COVID. And at the same time, Mr. Speaker, states have agreed to support the Commonwealth in our efforts to make the NDIS sustainable and to develop a shared system of supports for people living with disability who currently are outside the NDIS, as the Minister for the NDIS outlined at the press club today. This is what Australians want to see from all of their governments: better healthcare, better hospitals, better disability supports. And that approach that you saw yesterday from this Prime Minister could not be more different from the approach you saw over the past decade, Mr. Speaker, a decade of division, of duck shoving and of savage funding cuts. Duck shoving, of course, exemplified by the member for Cook, the former Prime Minister, and his daily refrain, his daily protest, "That's not my job." And of course, cuts. And of cuts.
Order.
Who were championed
Order.
More than any other person from
Members
that former government
left, the member
than
for
the
New
Leader
England.
Of the Opposition when he was Australia's Health Minister. Far from working together for Australia, Mr. Speaker, the
Order.
2014 budget document shows the approach of the Leader of the Opposition. He cut $50 billion in his first budget. Now he says, "Oh, rubbish, it's here. It's here, sunshine, in the graph, mate. $50 billion
Order.
In funding
Order.
Cuts from the state
Member
hospital
Broome.
System. And this is the same budget he wanted to abolish bulk billing altogether. The same budget he wanted to jack up medicine prices altogether. No wonder, Mr. Speaker, this man was voted the worst health minister in the Medicare era. 40
Order.
Long years, the worst health minister. But he was also, Mr. Speaker, the Wreck-It Ralph of Australia's Federation.
Order. House comes to order. I'll hear from the member for Nicholls.
My question is to the Prime Minister. Imran Dad lived in my electorate and was convicted and jailed for child sex offences and causing or inducing a child to take part in sex work. Dad recruited vulnerable children in state care for a child sex ring. The Albanese Labor government released him into the community and he has now been rearrested for alleged sex offender register breaches, including contacting children online. Why didn't the Prime Minister act sooner to protect my community and all Australians?
call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for his question. And it is indeed terrible that this person, as a result of the High Court, something we did not want to see.
Order, members on my left, that we, will cease interjecting.
That we did not want to see has been in that situation. But of course, it is a fact that from time to time,
Member for Forrest will cease interjecting.
Let me quote this. Three convicted terrorists have been accidentally released on the streets without any court-ordered supervision after illegal stuff-ups or police ran out of time to apply for control orders. Paul Dacre, Antonino Granada and Kadir Kale were freed from a Victorian prison Friday after serving 4 years in jail over a plot to sail to the Philippines and incite an Islamist uprising to bring down the government. Because the trio of tinny terrorists had served their complete jail terms, they are not on parole and are therefore subject to no court-ordered supervision.
The Prime Minister will pause on a point of order. The member for Nicholls. The member for Casey will cease interjecting. The Prime Minister will pause for a moment so I can hear from the member for... Order. The member for Casey will cease interjecting. The order... We'll move on. We won't hear the point of order. The Prime Minister in continuation. Well, if members will cease interjecting, I will hear the point of order. The member for Mitchell will cease interjecting. Members on my right will cease interjecting. The member for Nicholls is on his feet on a point of order and will be heard in silence.
Point of order on relevance. Mr. Speaker, the question related to a specific person who committed offences in my electorate and why the Albanese government hadn't acted sooner to protect my community and all Australians in relation to that.
Prime Minister, order. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition will cease interjecting. The question contained, why didn't the Prime Minister act sooner? He's giving an answer. I'm not sure what the subject matter is, but I'd like to hear what he's got to say so I can deal with the point of order and make sure the Prime Minister is being relevant. He has the call.
I'm speaking about the context of the law. And the law,
order,
from that set, in Herald Sun, 11th of May 2020, when you were in office, federal police have never succeeded in obtaining a continuing detention order. The Herald Sun, on the 14th of March 2021, three-quarters of the high-risk terrorism offenders released in 2020 were rearrested and charged with breaching their control orders. That occurred in November 2020, December 2020, December 2020, a 30-year-old Melbourne man, January 2021, a 25-year-old Sydney man, January 2021, a 35-year-old Melbourne man.
On my left will cease
April
interjecting.
2021, order. A Sydney man. November 2021, a convicted terrorist
order.
Defender
the of the
arrested
Nationals
for
will
repeatedly
will be
breaching
warden.
A control order. I am sympathetic order. With anyone, any of these circumstances. We have had to deal with these because you have to deal with the law as it is, just as the former
order.
Government did. Just as the former government did During the nine years in which it was in office, and barely a month went by where there wasn't a circumstance such as this.
Order. The member for Fisher will cease interjecting. Member for Boothby has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Skills and Training. What is the Albanese Labor government doing to combat the severe workforce deficits left by the previous government? And how is the government helping Australians facing cost of living challenges to skill up into secure, stable and well-paid work?
Great. Call to the Minister for Skills and Training.
Thanks very much, Speaker. Can I thank the member for Boothby for her question and a very strong support for the vet sector. It was only a while ago that the member and I joined the Treasurer and other ministerial colleagues to launch the Employment White Paper, talking about the correlation between the investment in skills and ensuring we've got sufficient skills for our labour market, our economy. And of course, that was the reason why the Prime Minister convened the Jobs and Skills Summit. And we just heard the Minister for Health talk about how critical it is to have collaboration amongst governments to deliver health reform and health investment. So too with education and training. We need the collaboration of all governments, and that Jobs and Skills Summit set the tone for the collaboration, which of course culminated in the announcement of 180,000 fee-free TAFE and VET places, of course, this year. As of the 30th of September, because the data does come in across all the VET providers, we have now reached 296,107 Australians enrolled in TAFE and VET courses in areas of demand. Now, this is a great example of the efforts that can be realised in terms of real outcomes if you work closely with state and territory governments and if you work with industry. Now, this year, looking at what we have done this year, we put together the Jobs and Skills Australia, a body that represents industry, universities, the VET sector, bringing together all of those constituent parts to provide better advice to government. We now have 10 Jobs and Skills Councils. They are critical because they represent different sectors of our economy, so we understand more fully what we need to supply the skills to each and every part of our economy. And of course, when it comes to delivering the skills, we inherited the deepest and broadest skill shortage in this country for five decades, 50 years. It hasn't been so bad, and I have to say we have done very well to date, but we have got a lot more to do. And that's why we announced, the Prime Minister and I recently announced with the ACT Chief Minister, that we would be increasing an additional 300,000 fee-free TAFE and VET places starting next year, because we need to supply the skills to our economy. We need to make sure working people have skills so they can get meaningful work, that we ensure that businesses can have the skilled workforce they're crying out for, and our economy has the sufficient skills so our economy grows and so we can produce the goods and services that Australians deserve. Mr. Speaker, we will continue to work with state and territory governments, continue to work with industry to ensure that we supply the skills that's very much needed.
Call to the Manager of Opposition Business.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Vice President of the Rule of Law Institute, Chris Merritt, has said that on November 8, quotes, "The government was obliged only to release NZYQ. It was under no obligation to release the others because it could not be certain about the new principles governing indefinite detention. The government could have used the time between November 8 and November 28 to put legislation in place to keep Australians safe. Will the minister apologise to Australians for his catastrophic failure and to the victims of crimes carried out by the released detainees?"
Order. The Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you, Speaker. As the statement tabled by the Attorney-General earlier this week makes crystal clear, the decision set a new limit on the power the executive has to detain anyone in the same position as the plaintiff, anyone in the same position of the plaintiff, and further, that had to be implemented immediately. That is the case. That is the law, a law that was unequivocally confirmed by the written decisions delivered by the court.
Order. The member for Barker has been continually interjecting and will leave the chamber under 94A. Merry Christmas. Order. I give the call to the member for Lyons.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Yesterday, National Cabinet agreed on a new National Firearms Registry. What does this registry do, and why is it needed?
The call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Lyons for his question, and it's appropriate that it comes from the member for Lyons, who of course represents Port Arthur, the site of the horrific massacre back in 1996. And this landmark agreement yesterday represents the next big step forward in the gun reforms that were initiated following that massacre. For decades, federal, state and territory law enforcement agencies have repeatedly raised concerns about the difficulty of tracking firearms across state and territory borders. We know the dangers those who work in law enforcement face keeping us safe. We saw it in South Australia just last month with the death of Brevet Sergeant Jason Doig. We saw it at Weambilla on December 12 last year with the murders of Constable Rachel McCrow, Constable Matthew Arnold and Alan Dare. The National Firearms Register will make sure police officers have the vital information they need in potentially dangerous situations. It will be a central register developed and managed by the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission to provide information and connect with the National Criminal Intelligence System to integrate firearms information with other risk factors such as criminal history and court orders. It will include a national license verification function for firearms dealers to check a person's status in near real time. It will integrate firearms dealer information with state and territory registries. The system will be fully operational by 2028. It will save lives. And I acknowledge the great work done by the Attorney General and all state and territory police ministers. I also want to acknowledge great Australians like Walter Mikak. Walter's daughters, Alana and Madeline, and their mother were killed at Port Arthur. He wrote to Prime Minister John Howard and state and territory leaders urging them to act on gun reform. Remarkable letters, such strength amid grief. He finished his letter with a simple call: be strong and act now. To the credit of former Prime Minister Howard, of Tim Fisher, and people across the political spectrum, action did take place. We did make the first steps. Yesterday, we as a nation took the next step, working together to keep Australians safe.
I call to the honourable member for Clark.
Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Communications. Minister, yesterday on ABC Radio, you disassociated politicians from the government's misinformation and disinformation bill by claiming that truth in political advertising is a matter for the AEC. However, we all know that the AEC has no jurisdiction over the honesty of political parties, politicians and political candidates. So will you now admit your statement yesterday was misleading, correct the record and commit to properly regulate truth in political advertising?
I'm just going to hear from the Leader of the House.
Mr Speaker, while the question about the role of the AEC is certainly a question that's in order to be asked, and I'm not disputing that, it's being asked to a minister who has no responsibility for that agency simply because the minister referred to it in a radio interview, which ordinarily would have to be redirected to the appropriate minister.
May I assist the House if you could rephrase that question, because the minister is obviously not responsible for the Australian Electoral Commission, but it's regarding her remarks. I'll give the member the opportunity just to rephrase the question to assist the House.
Minister, yesterday on ABC Radio, you disassociated politicians from the government's misinformation and disinformation bill by claiming that truth in political advertising will not be covered by that bill. However, we all know that the AEC has no jurisdiction over the honesty of political parties, politicians and political candidates. So will you now admit that your statement about the exclusions from your misinformation and disinformation bill was misleading? Will you correct the record and commit to properly regulate truth in political advertising?
Call to the Minister for Social Services.
Thank you, Speaker. And in my capacity as representing the Special Minister for State, I thank the member for his question. The growth in mis- and disinformation is widespread. It's not only on our shores, but occurring in democracies around the world. Elections and referenda are a contest of ideas. However, the truth must be at the core. Last year, the Special Minister of State wrote to the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters and asked...
Minister will pause. The member for Clark on a point of order.
Speaker, on relevance, the essence of the question clearly goes to the Minister for Communications misleading the Australian community in the media yesterday.
Well, the minister is being relevant to the question, and under the standing orders, she's entitled to answer it. Ms. has a call.
As I was saying to the member, last year the Special Minister of State wrote to the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters and asked that it inquire into the 2022 federal election and related matters, and included the potential for truth in political advertising.
The Minister may. On the point of order.
Just as I understand the question to you, but as I understand the member for Clark's question, he's referring to comments made by the Minister for Communications, and he's asking for a response and clarification in relation to the comments made by the Minister for Communications, which is why the question is properly put to her.
The Leader of the House.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Order, the Leader of the Opposition, we're just going to deal with this matter in a courteous way.
For any question to be asked in the House, it has to be to a minister relating to their ministerial responsibilities. So the only way the question can be in order is for it to be answered by the minister who is representing the minister who has responsibility for the AEC.
I'll just deal with this matter.
And if I could just page 549 of practice makes it clear that if a question has been addressed to the incorrect minister, the responsible minister may answer, which is exactly what's happening.
And I did give the opportunity for the member, because of the subject content, to rephrase the question. He chose not to do that. And the subject matter, because of the question, if he'd rephrased it and just said to the minister's interview or gave the date, it wasn't. And, well, I gave him the opportunity. He chose not to do that. So we'll just continue under the standing orders in the practice for that to occur. Yes, but the nature of the question contained the information about the Australian Electoral Commission. Under the standing orders and under the practice, the way the question was phrased, the minister has the responsibility. And I'll just get her to conclude her answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Speaker. Last year, the Special Minister of State.
The minister will pause. I'll deal with one moment at a time. If someone's made an unparliamentary language, I'll ask them to withdraw. I didn't hear what was happening, but anyway, we'll deal with order. The member for La Trobe and the member for McEwen will cease interjecting. The Leader of the Opposition is on his feet on a point of order.
Mr. Speaker, I think in the circumstances it would be appropriate, if I might say, to ask the member for Clark, now that he understands your point, because I don't think it was clear, to be fair, I don't think it was clear in the first instance. And if in the redrafting of his question he doesn't make specific reference to the AEC, then I don't see how the question couldn't be in order.
Well, I've explained the situation. I've explained what I gave the opportunity for the member for Clark. I'll discuss with him after question time to make sure he's crystal clear of the standing orders and the practice moving forward. I'm just going to ask the minister to conclude her answer.
Thank you, Speaker. Well, last year the Special Minister of State wrote to the Joint Standing Committee on Electoral Matters and asked that it inquire into the 2022 federal election and related matters, and included the potential truth in political advertising laws to enhance the integrity and transparency of the electoral system.
Order.
Of course,
the Minister will pause. The member for Clark.
Speaker, the government is attempting a cover-up.
Resume your seat. Resume your seat. It's not a point of order. Just ask the minister to conclude her answer.
Look, of course, the government will consider the recommendations and changes put forth by JSCEM in its final report. We welcome that report when it does come.
Give a call to the member for Fremantle.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Environment and Water. How is the Albanese Labor government delivering on its promise to protect, restore and manage Australia's natural environment, and what challenges has it faced in achieving these protections?
Order. Yes, well, the Leader of the Nationals will just remain silent for this answer, hopefully. Give the call to the Minister for the Environment and Water.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the member for Fremantle for his question. He is truly one of this parliament's greatest environmentalists. Mr. Speaker, Labor has delivered more to protect our environment in the last 9 days than those opposite did in 9 years. In fact, in this sitting of Parliament, we have rescued the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, protecting the animals and the plants of Australia's largest inland river system, and making sure that the 3 million people who rely on this river system for their drinking water, the farmers, the towns and communities, are able to share that water resource. In fact, we've also passed our legislation to establish the world's first nature repair market, bringing more private and philanthropic investment into environmental restoration without greenwashing, supporting farmers and First Nations communities to look after their land. The Northern Land Council called this a game changer for Aboriginal people across Northern Australia. And we've made good on our promise to update the water trigger in our national environmental laws, meaning that all unconventional gas projects will be assessed against their impact on our water resources. This has been the biggest week for environmental protection in over a decade.
The Minister will pause. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition will cease interjecting and is warned. So, no more interjections. The Minister for the Environment and Water.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Coming on top of all of this comes on top of the policies that we have already delivered, doubling funding for our national parks, doubling the number of Indigenous rangers, putting net zero emissions firmly into our national law, boosting renewable energy projects. We've doubled the rate of approvals for renewable energy projects, restoring our urban rivers, protecting the Great Barrier Reef, increasing our recycling capacity by more than 1 million tonnes every year, tripling the size of the Macquarie Island Marine Park, one of the biggest conservation decisions made this year anywhere in the world. In fact, we have added 40 million hectares of land and sea to the area under conservation in Australia. When we establish Australia's first environment protection agency, we'll do even better. When we rewrite our national environmental laws, we'll do even better. Labor is turning the tide after a decade of neglect by those opposite, a decade where the Liberals and the Nationals undermined climate action, sabotaged the Murray-Darling Basin Plan, launched 22 different energy policies and didn't land a single one of them.
Minister will pause. The Leader of the Nationals has been consistently interjecting all throughout this answer and through question time. He will leave the chamber under 94A. The order. Members on my left will cease interjecting. The Minister will continue with her answer.
Mr. Speaker, Australians voted for an end to the political fighting over climate change. They voted for a government that will fight to get things done for nature, and that's exactly what
Labor's
doing.
Time has concluded. Call to the member for Wannan.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. The Minister for Immigration has now confirmed that he released a criminal with an outstanding warrant into the community. What will it take for the Prime Minister to finally take action and sack this incompetent minister?
Order. Give the call to order. Members on my right and left, there's far too much noise during these answers. Order. Give the call to the Prime Minister.
Ministers O'Neill and Giles have done more to address this issue in a month than those opposite did in 9 years. In 9 years.
Order.
In 9 years.
Order.
And I make this point.
The
I make
member
this
for
point,
Fisher
Mr. Speaker,
was ceased interjecting.
After the High Court, mate.
Order.
Are you ready?
Members on my left, I just said before the Prime Minister spoke there's far too much noise. There's now a general warning issued. The member for Bowman was on a warning. He interjected during that answer. That means he will leave under the standing orders as well. It's far too much noise. I know it's the last day. Far too much noise. Prime Minister has the call.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. After the High Court made the decision that they did, our government has been focused on fixing this. This is something that we inherited from a decision that overturned a 20-year-old decision under the Howard government, not under a Labor government.
Order.
And one of the things that happened on Sunday, Mr. Speaker, as we said very clearly, was that we offered a briefing to the opposition on the legal advice. Did they get it on Sunday? Did they do it on Monday? Did they look at the legal advice on Tuesday? Did they look at the legal advice on Wednesday? Or did they look at the legal advice on Thursday? No.
Order. The Prime Minister was asked about what it would take, and he's answering the question, so he's being directly relevant. So the member for Wannon will have to say the state the point of order, not just give a statement, because there'll be consequences for that. So what's on, the member for Wannon has the call.
On relevance, Speaker, on relevance.
Resume your seat. Yeah. Resume your seat. Yeah. So, as I said, the Prime Minister is understanding Order 104. The Prime Minister is being relevant to the question, but I'll make sure he sticks to the question. He has the call.
I was asked about the Minister, and he has responded on the basis of the legal advice that we have said, under the terms agreed to by the opposition, we would make available for them to go into the room, read the legal advice so that they could assure themselves of the basis of the government's actions. Having read it on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday, Mr. Speaker, too interested in playing politics. They refused to make themselves available.
The member for Groom.
The member for Wannon was busy off at the races, the Jericho Cup, so he wasn't available. James Paterson, Senator Paterson,
order.
The Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, is too busy off at Harvard doing a course.
Order.
Senator Cash wasn't
members
able to find time in between Sky interviews. And the Leader of the Opposition has not made himself available either. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Order.
Have failed to avail
order.
Themselves
members on my left
of the
and
offer
my right.
That we made very clearly. We contacted them. We made times available. We made three times available for them, and on none of them
order. The member
have
for New
they
England.
Made themselves available to walk into the
order.
Secure room and read the advice or
member
sit down on
warned.
That basis. They have been too interested in being able to say things they know is not true.
Order. The Prime Minister's time has concluded. Order. Give the call to the honourable member for Parramatta.
My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport and Regional Development. How is the Albanese Labor government reforming Infrastructure Australia to ensure that all communities benefit from Commonwealth infrastructure investment, and why is this reform needed?
Give a call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you very much, and can I thank very much the member for Parramatta for the question. Well, this government is getting on with the job of delivering the infrastructure
order.
That our nation needs, creating jobs and
member
growing the economy
Hinkler.
Whilst not increasing pressure on inflation. And I heard an interjection before about how inland rail's going from the member for New England. Better than it was under you, with a $31 billion blowout in costs. You know, that's better than it was under you.
Order.
We've delivered our reforms to the infrastructure investment program that will see over 400 nation-building projects completed or substantially delivered over the next 10 years. We've released our infrastructure policy investment statement, that will guide Commonwealth infrastructure investment into the future. And we are, of course, making record investments in projects like, in programs like Roads to Recovery and the Black Spots program for every single council, no colour-coded spreadsheets, every single council across the country. And last night, I can say, the Parliament finally passed the reforms to the Infrastructure Australia, delivering on our election commitment to restore the organisation to being the Commonwealth's premier advisor on major infrastructure investment in this country. Of course, under the Liberals and Nationals, Infrastructure Australia had lost direction. It was full of political appointments, and its advice on infrastructure matters was often ignored. Under the Liberals, we saw significant pork barrelling when it came to the infrastructure investment program. And when presented with our proposal to reform Infrastructure Australia, the Liberals and Nationals refused to engage with the government and, of course, tried for months to obstruct passage of the bill to this critical legislation. They diminished Infrastructure Australia when in government and they were determined to do it again from opposition. Nevertheless, we worked to ensure the passage of this bill through the parliament, and our reforms mean that Infrastructure Australia has a properly defined mandate, will improve the evaluation of infrastructure proposals across the country, provides government with more targeted infrastructure priority list, a list that will mean that nationally significant infrastructure proposals are prioritised for consideration by the Australian government in the unique co-investment position we are in. We are reducing duplication with states and territories and improving evaluation of infrastructure projects, and we're creating stronger governance comprised of three expert commissioners supported by an advisory council, ending, frankly, the coalition's record of appointing their mates to this significant economic body. But underpinning sound infrastructure investment decisions makes an important contribution to productivity. This is the Albanese Labor government getting on with our election committees, getting on with the job of delivering and, frankly, cleaning up the mess of those economic vandals opposite.
Concluded. Call to the Leader of the Australian Greens.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. In my last two questions to you on coal and gas, you handed it off to someone else, but I ask you directly today, as head of the government, will Labor join more than 100 countries and support a call for a phase out of coal, oil and gas in the communique from this week's climate summit?
Order. Give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member from Melbourne for his question. And Australia, when we are at the COP summit, where Minister Bowen is representing Australia there, will be back around the table with credibility, as we have been at the Pacific Island Forum, as we are in our region. Because we are a government that is taking climate change seriously. We're a government that understands in order to take climate change seriously, you need to bring the community with you. And you can't also just flick a switch or with the best of intentions. What you need is a plan and a strategy to get there. We have that through the safeguards mechanism, of which is the key to driving that change to 43% reduction by 2030 and net zero by 2050. You've had in the last month that supported by the measures we took on the capacity investment scheme that will provide for that certainty to de-risk projects to make sure that the investment flows through in renewable energy. You can't simply just say, oh, well, we'll just change overnight, because what you need to do is to make sure that energy security and reliability is part of the system. That's why, for example, a gas will continue to play an important role in providing stability in the system. That's how renewables will be able to operate. We have a comprehensive plan, including our Rewiring the Nation plan, based upon IEMO's Integrated Systems Plan, that has been in place for a long period of time. But when you combine all of those measures, all of which were supported by the crossbenchers, the legislation in order to achieve those targets, in order to put the safeguard mechanism in place.
The Prime Minister is being relevant to the question, so I'm going to ask the leader of the Australian Greens to state his point of order.
The point of order is on relevance and the point of phase out of coal. The question was about the phase out of coal and whether that will be something Australia joins the communique at this week's summit, not about other matters.
Well, the first sentence the Prime Minister mentioned the COP summit. He's talking about the question. He's talking directly. You may not agree with the answer, you may not like the answer, but under the standing orders, 104, he's got to be relevant to the question. He is being relevant.
I'll make this point as well, Mr. Speaker. Australia will remain a reliable energy supplier. We're a country that don't renege on the contracts that we make, and in the region that's really important. But we need to make sure that the transition that's occurring through market-based mechanisms, because the cheapest forms of new energy are the cleanest forms of energy, that the prospects that we have in an area like Whyalla, where the coal-fired generator has been turned off to make steel, because they'll go through gas firstly, but then, importantly, green hydrogen to produce green steel.
Order.
That's Australia's future
time
very much.
Has concluded. Call to the honourable member for Hasluck.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How has the Albanese Labor government been working for Australians over the course of 2023?
Order. Members on my left. The member for Groome. The members on my left. Prime Minister has the call.
I thank the member for Hasluck for her question and for her commitment to the people of that wonderful part of Perth. We have, since we came into office, seen the creation of at least 624,000 new jobs. That will always be a priority of a Labor government. More jobs created than any new government in Australia's history, and we're only halfway through. We have the lowest gender pay gap on record. We have record women's workforce participation. We've got real wages moving two quarters in a row. We have a pay rise, 15% pay rise for aged care workers. We have an increase in the minimum wage. We have, of course, the first budget surplus in 15 years. Turning a $78 billion deficit under them
order.
Into a $22 billion
members
surplus.
On my left. Order.
All the mugs are over there.
We're also delivering on cost of living measures. Cheaper childcare began on July 1.
Order.
Cheaper medicines began on January 1.
Member for Hume.
Medicare urgent care clinics, 58 of them by the end of the year. We've tripled the bulk billing incentive for Medicare.
Order. The member for Fisher.
We've delivered already 300,000 fee-free TAFE places, energy bill relief, strengthening paid parental leave, increased support for job seekers and single parents and people who need rent assistance. All
Order.
These measures opposed by those opposite. We've put in place the Housing Australia Future Fund, the Social Housing Accelerator, the national housing target of 1.2 million homes.
Order.
The Better Deal for Renters, the Expanded Home Guarantee Scheme. And we're delivering. The National Reconstruction Fund is up and running. We passed the safeguard mechanism to bring down emissions.
Order.
10 days paid family and domestic violence leave. We said there'd be a National Anti-Corruption Commission,
members on my
and
left.
It is operating. The Robodebt Royal Commission, consigning that to the dustbin of history where it belongs. And we've restored Australia's standing internationally. We have been getting on with the job of working for Australia each and every day.
Order.
Delivering on our promises that we made, but also pointing towards the future. More fee-free TAFE places, more cost of living relief, further strengthening of Medicare, underlined by yesterday's National Cabinet meeting.
Order.
We'll continue
Prime
to work
Minister's
for Australia.
Time.
And on that note, Mr. Speaker, I ask that further questions be placed on the notice paper.